The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So then there were two, Cheddar. We have Waterford and Limerick in the final this weekend. And it's a novel final because they've never met in the final before. There are a lot of people's second teams, I would imagine, down in Munster. Waterford definitely are my second team, and Limerick wouldn't be too far away from them in the last few years. Interestingly enough, from Limerick, right? I was just reading this couple of stats from Colm Keyes. He says, it's a measure of the difficulty involved that outside of Kilkenny, no other county since Galway in 1989 has followed up an All-Ireland win in September with a league hurling title the following spring. So Kilkenny did it in 03, 09, 12, 13. But that's out of 11. So they did it four out of their 11 All-Ireland titles, which is not a huge hit rate, but they're the only team that did it outside of Galway. So, like, I mean, Limerick are up against a little bit of history maybe at the weekend here.
I suppose, Willie, it's difficult to draw conclusions from that, because you're not too sure, you know, did Galway actively go for the league last year? You'd probably say not. They were trying to try out players and that.
True. Tip did the year before, I think, did they? They got hammered by Galway in the final.
Yes, and I suppose it just brings you back to that other point, though. You know, Brian always goes for the league. If he can go for it, and if it's the right team to go for it, he'll always go for it to win every match anyway, and to win the league as well. You know, he means what he says when he does that. So it's difficult to draw conclusions from statistics like that. I think a number of years ago, obviously managers and counties and county boards and teams, everybody wanted to win the league. It was, you know, a serious, serious competition to win, and drew huge crowds in that. I think with the changes to the championship now, you know, it just may not have the same importance anymore. And, you know, certainly managers will be looking at it differently now than they were back then. The other thing you need to look at as well, that there was a big gap between the league and the championship, you know, a number of years ago. So you got a chance to, I suppose, recalibrate your team and look at your team and that. So, you know, you could go on and try and win the league. But now you need to seriously look at that. You know, you might look at it gaining momentum to go into a Munster Championship or to go into a Leinster Championship. So I think there's very different reasons about how management and how teams look. It's not just management, how the whole team looks approaching the league now towards what it was a number of years ago.
Yeah, so we'll have to change those stats based on who cared about the league in those years. No, it's a fair point.
I think you need to draw other reasons into it anyway, really. It wouldn't be just clear cut to draw a clean a trend from a statistic like that.
So I was looking down through the league finals to see did Waterford play Limerick before, and I've put into Wikipedia and searched for Waterford, and it came up through Waterford's finals, and lo and behold, I came across the 1962 final. Waterford won the league. They won the league final after a replay. Who did they beat? New York. I thought that was an interesting one. I'm wondering, do you have any recollection of that going on?
You're pushing me there now, Willie. You are. Well, look, there's a couple of interesting things about that. Waterford had a really great team. It was the last period prior to the 90s team that had a really, really good team. I think they were in an All-Ireland final in the late 50s. Kilkenny beat them. So they were obviously a very strong team around that time. And it wouldn't surprise me that they were in a league final around then, had some great players, and were a very, very strong team right throughout the 60s. I stand corrected on this, but I think Cork won in All-Ireland maybe in 66, and Waterford beat him in the first round in Waterford in the 67 Munster Championship. I remember Tom O'Donoghue was sent off. So Waterford had a strong team around then, and it's not surprising that they were in the final. It might be a bit of a surprise to some people that New York were in the final.
Exactly.
And I just from recollection, and I think, you know, there'd be more serious GAA heads and hurling heads than me now would be able to draw a better recollection of this, but I think there was an actual home final at that stage, and I think you played New York then. I think actually London might have been in it a couple of times as well, which has certainly played New York then in the full final or whatever you want to call it. I can't actually think of how it was classified at the time. What's surprising, Willie, is that New York were in a number of those finals and acquitted themselves very, very well at the time. There was only a couple of pints in it. They were actually, New York had a serious team around that time. And, you know, it may have been maybe due to immigration or whatever the case may be. But they had a serious team around that time. I don't know the score of that game in 62, but it wouldn't surprise me if it wasn't that, the gap wasn't huge in it.
Yeah, well, it was a replay. So they drew it. They drew them in the first match. So the league champions went out to play them in another league final kind of thing.
That's my recollection
something
of it,
like
Willie,
that.
But, you know, there'd be people who would
that's
be...
That's a nice little thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it was. And at the time, you know, it was good for New York as well. You know, obviously, if there was that level of immigration, you know, to consider the late 50s, early 60s, that you know, they had something to connect with home. And, you know, we talk about G and its identity and all of those things. My recollection is that there were some fair crowds at that. And I'm thinking of something else, actually. There was there used to be a tournament take place in London. I'm not too sure if it was played in Wembley or not, actually, Woolley. Between the All-Ireland champions, and I'm not too sure who were else in it, but actually there used to be huge attendances go to it, and I suppose it was the, you know, people, the Irish people in London and Irish people in New York and that, you know, they would see it as, you know, some little bit from home and turn up for the game and support the game and that. But I have a recollection of that. Maybe there's some listeners that would, you know, have a better recollection of the history of it than that might provide more detail than I am.
Yeah, well, you've done well after being put on the spot. I'll give it to you that way. So penalties are deciding the final this weekend, Chad. Are you a fan of this?
No, I'm not really, but I can understand why they are. Look, it's a terrible way to decide a game.
Be exciting though, Cheddar, no?
No, it is exciting. It is exciting for supporters, and, you know, it's edge of the seat stuff, really, but I just don't think it's the right way of deciding a game, Willie, to be honest with you. I really prefer to play an extra 5 minutes each way, and, you know, hopefully that would resolve it. I think it's fair to do that. A lot of pressure on penalty takers, and maybe less pressure on goalkeepers. Are not expected to save the ball, but either penalties or even the 65s rank, that's a lot of pressure on an individual person, you know, at the end of the day, they're amateur players.
Well, that's a fair point. I hadn't really thought of that for a player to be the scapegoat after losing a big game, if he's the only one that missed that. I haven't really thought. I'm thinking more of the selfish supporter kind of excitement value. Maybe I'm losing touch with my player ex-player
it's the seat stuff, and look, obviously great TV viewing and all of that, and, you know, would be very, very, very exciting, but, you know, you've got to think of the long term. And you know, there's some far-reaching consequences for some players who have to miss a game and miss a score like that. It might be the only league final you were in a long number of years, and you know what happens. You know the way, I suppose, social media can heap a lot of pressure.
Stay
on
off
people,
Twitter,
you know,
would be the advice to these young
people. Would be, yes.
Right. So, come here. I was reading this week. Tony O'Regan has joined the Limerick backroom team. So he is a performance psychology coach. So he's a sports psychologist, is pretty much what I would imagine. He's replacing Caroline Currid. So Regan has worked with the Galway Miners in 2015 and 2017, and he was with the Tipperary All-Ireland winning team under Michael Ryan in 2016. So he has got great pedigree, and he obviously is an ex-player, which adds a huge amount of credence to him able to, whatever angle he wants to come at things, he's walked in their boots. So it looks to me like a great signing. Caroline Currid is obviously incredibly high regarded, and we spoke a lot about her last year, especially at the live shows. But incidentally, she's being tipped now, or it's been speculated that she might go back in with Tipperary, because she worked with Liam Sheedy in 2010. So just thinking, like, if she goes back into Tipperary, she could completely spill the beans on an awful lot of information there, couldn't she, of the Limerick kind of backroom, tactics, system, what makes players tick, what they don't like. Realistically, you're a sitting duck maybe to lose somebody like that. You open yourself up to these sports psychologists so much, and then they could move camp. I'm not saying she is. I'm saying hypothetically, you give them so much of yourself that it must be heartbreaking to see a sports psychologist above anybody else move to another team.
No, I disagree with that, Willie, actually.
No?
I can see your reasoning for saying it. First of all, all of these people are highly qualified people. And just bear in mind the area that their expertise is in. A lot of that is very, very confidential stuff. And they're bound by their own profession not to say anything about that. And they wouldn't even say it, actually, Willie, to their management team. There would be certain things that are just not discussed between player confidentiality, between the likes of Caroline and Tony Oak and that would not be discussed. And they would be very, very, they'll tell you pretty clearly, very, very quickly about that. So that confidentiality and that trust is never broken between these people and the players is the first point.
So they've got that doctor kind of confidentiality. I didn't think they were supposed to be psychologists. No doubt about it, they are.
And I think this brings us maybe to a different point. I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but that's the real I suppose, gold dust in terms of using and employing the right people here, because there's no residue or there's no risk. You know, look, the legal consequence of that would be savage if that did happen. It doesn't happen anyway. I'd be very, very confident about that. Back to your other point. Look, if the opposition hurling coaches don't know enough about the Limerick or the Waterford or the Cork style of play, well, they shouldn't be hurling coaches in that team. And I don't think Caroline going to Tipperary would tell Tommy Dunn or Darry Egan or Eamon O'Shea anything more that's needed to know about the hurling system than they already know. Considering the level of analysis and video analysis that goes into preparation of teams and preparation and awareness in the opposition, I don't think that makes a huge difference. I think what's interesting is, and I think that sort of kills that woolly. There certainly is.
I know. I was talking nonsense there.
There's no
obviously.
Sharing of information. I know you were.
And pull me up on that one.
Just for the listeners, you know, just to give that comfort to the
sometimes
listeners.
Sometimes I'm glad you're here, Cheddar.
Sometimes I just think you to be setting me up, Woolly. But anyway, so you know, look, I suppose you know we're conscious here, Woolly, as well, that you know there are people listening to this and they would have some concerns around that. That may not know, yeah. And we just needed to clear the air, and yeah. That I suppose really more than anything else.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting is their role in management teams and that. And you know, I do read and hear so much written and spoken about, you know, what they do in teams and all of that, and most of it is ridicule, to be honest with you. And there is a little bit of a traditional and I suppose a held view that the manager should be performing that role anyway, I'm definitely not qualified enough, and I certainly would speak to John Kiley and Micheál Donoghue, Woolly, on this. You know, I certainly need to speak to a couple of other people that have, you know, went to higher performances than I have. But they're incredibly useful, incredibly a part of the management team. And, you know, they don't work in terms of the front. In front of the dressing room, motivation and that type of stuff. Their role is very, very, very different than that. And look, one of their first jobs is actually to look at the management team themselves and to look at the manager. We were very, very lucky to have Áine McNamara involved with Laois when I was involved with him. So I have a small bit of experience in this. And before I speak anything on it, Woolly, and this show is probably a little bit too short to fully describe what sports psychologists or performance psychologists or mental game coaches, there's a number of different names on them, would bring to a team. And I'm a little bit low to speak about the details here because I'm not qualified in the area, but I'll just give my explanation in as much as I can in terms of what they do to teams and that. But I would seriously suggest that to get the definitive view and the right way to apply sports psychology, you really need to speak to a sports psychologist or a person that's qualified in this area rather than me giving a sort of a second-hand view. But, you know, the way, even the manager himself, the way he approaches it, how he looks, how he deals with loss, how he deals with victory, what the players see in him, are all things that a sports psychologist would be looking at. You know, your body language, the way you communicate to your players. So the first role of the sports psychologist is actually to deal with management.
With the manager.
More than likely. And with the manager. And, you know, I have been that person, Willie. So, and, you know, you welcome that. You know, you're very open about that and you welcome that. Because you don't have a chance to look in the mirror most of the time yourself. And a lot of the time, I'm probably going to deal with a couple of words here that come up a lot of the time, and unfortunately they're a little bit cliched at the minute. You know, just consider it for a minute. It's a very, very emotive environment, and you don't want to be managing on emotions. You want to be managing on process and the right things to do and giving the right instructions to players. And sometimes it's easy to say that, and sometimes on the sideline or up in the stand or wherever you are, but particularly in the dressing room, maybe before the game or at half time, it's difficult to get a clear train of thought of the things that need to get fixed. And you know, somebody training you on that and just keeping you with your finger on the pulse of the process the whole time, rather than getting emotively involved in things, is a very, very good thing for a management team and a manager to actually have. So that's the first thing I would say on it. But to play a huge role with players, and I suppose I'll just use a couple of things. look, there's a lot of pressures on players. You know, you even just take a free taker, taking frees. You know, he'll have his routine or she will have her routine. But there's a lot of other mental imagery that the person can use, you know, in terms of preparing to take frees, for example. And the other area is there's a lot of pressures on players, you know, from outside life and that. And sometimes we're all human beings and a lot of us don't have the coping skills to be able to deal with this. And that's the real areas, I think, that to bring, you know, great benefit to a team. Bring coping skills to individual players. It may be lifestyle. It may be something to deal with life. It may be playing. It may be nervousness before big games. It may be a free taker. You know, there's a whole range of things. I could speak for half an hour here about a huge amount of benefits that a sports psychologist or whatever you want to classify them as, you know, would bring to it. Look, one of the big things is staying composed under pressure. And, you know, how do you do that? And what are the little mental techniques that you use? And I suppose if I took a step back, Woolly, I'd say, look, we've got hurling coaches to coach technical and tactical hurling. And we've got S&C people to coach and condition players. Well, the mind needs training as well as the body. The mental side needs training and can be trained the very, very same as the physical side. And to do that, you need the expertise in that area to do that. So I suppose it's preparing players psychologically for the competition. And I suppose just to deal with the psychological demands that a competition is going to throw up. And we're you know, GA teams at the top now are professional players. If it's good enough for New Zealand rugby to have three or four of these people or whoever these American football teams or whoever they are, well, you know, they're not going to throw out money easily to these people. They're there for a specific reason. And, yeah, you know, considering where GA has gone now, I'm not surprising. And it's a key part in a management team. The psychological preparation, I suppose, train the mind is really critical. And there's a number of techniques, I suppose, that you use. I don't want to dwell on it completely, Woolly, but it's an area that I'm very, very interested in. So even the visualization of, you know, training the mind. And I really would prefer the expert here to actually talk about this, because I know I'm going to do a bad job on it. But you know, they would say, look, close your eyes and you know, what do you want to see here? You know, so visualize what you actually want. And you know, when you do that, you draw pictures or images. And like, this is where they're really going. It's the positivity of that and the positive the thoughts that, you know, that gets you. And then rehearsing brings you into, I suppose it's a word that they call flow as such. And then look, you're in a really, really good space and in terms of a great place then to actually perform. What's, I think, really interesting about that is that works really well when players play with systems. There is a circular thing going on here. And again, I'm not going to go into the depth in this because I much prefer the experts to actually explain this. But what we're really trying to do is program the subconscious mind to perform in pressured situations. And if you were playing with systems, in other words, you have something to hang all of that onto, then that's a really, really good place to be in. And
if because you're visualizing your role within the system, absolutely. Then when you start playing, when the game starts, you're doing what you already thought you were doing. Now, I jeer at visualization a little bit, Cheddar, and I say that I visualized the whole way through my football career. It's called daydreaming about the match. And that's kind of like how I would have visualized. So, like, I do take the visualization. I thought Aaron Galan on Caroline Curid, I think this is the most important aspect, maybe myself. He said she got on with everyone and everyone had great time for her. That's just abided by, which is probably very important. And Tony O'Regan, they're saying the same things about. She was a great outlet if anything was playing on your mind or if there was anything you wanted to talk about going out playing a big match. And I think that's a big one. Having that ear, that professional ear, to tell insecurities that you might have, to tell about, like you mentioned, being nervous, to tell about maybe having some concerns about the fella you're marking, that you just simply can't tell the manager because you don't want to compromise your position on the team. Like, I think that one-on-one and having someone to talk to, like, I mean, you know, us Irish men aren't the greatest for talking about, but like, maybe, you know, it wasn't ever there, so you just kind of deal with it yourself.
I think the crucial part of it though, Willie, is that this person is an expert in offering you coping skills about how to sort out whatever little problem you have. And it brings me to another point. I'm always surprised by interventions, let's call them, because I would always see these people that they're within the team on a regular basis. they don't need to be there every training session, but they certainly need to be there at least once a week. It's not just fly in and fly out again. So that mental training is ongoing. It's probably every day, to be honest with you. It's no different than the physiological training or the skills training, whatever. It's, you need to be doing it every day to train the mind to think positively in a certain way. So I do be surprised sometimes. I know there's good benefits, maybe sometimes of bringing in somebody to give a team talk, and there, you know, there might be a need for doing that. But I'm a much bigger fan of having a person, regularly involved with the team, and more often than not in the background. The work that they do is generally speaking in the background, and they have a huge beneficial effect on a team, and particularly if a team is playing with the systems, and particularly if that team has had an awful lot of losses over the last number of years. So they have to deal with a lot of baggage here and just sift out the baggage and move forward.
That's another thing. Galan was talking about, he said, I think she kind of gave us confidence. That might have been something that was missing in Limerick for the last few years. So, like, I mean, she was working on their confidence, doing little things. The one thing I'm interested in with sports psychology is I can see a huge value for players who want to go and have those one-on-ones and get that training. Now, there's half the panel might want to do that, and there's another half that might say, I don't need that. So I find the group sessions, I don't find them great, because in my experience now, I wouldn't have had a Caroline Curid. I would have had fairly poor, I thought, sports psychologists, or even a Tony O'Gregan. I don't know about him, but Caroline is so highly rated that I remember the sports psychologist speaking to the whole panel, and I would have been throwing my eyes up to heaven, and other lads around me would have been, and some lads might have wanted to listen. So, like, one size doesn't fit all to speak to a group is the point I'm making, whereas one-on-ones, you help the lads that want that help.
And I think it's up to the sports psychologists themselves to, no more than it is with a manager or a coach. Like, you know, you have got to spend a lot yourself as well to get that connection and that buy-in from players. And players are not just because you have a number of letters after your name. All of these players now are highly intelligent themselves. They're not just going to take that as a given. Well, this is going to solve the problems here. You know, it's like the Bible. You need to put your hand in the wound before you're going to believe. Look, their skills are particular to that area. Your hurling, your technical coaches, their skills are particular to that area. You wouldn't get your technical coach, for example, to manage your strength and conditioning at inter-county level. You might do it at club level, but not at inter-county level. And you just look at the winning teams for the last, I don't know how many years, and look at the quality of the people that's involved in them, and look at the quality of some of those people that ended up in rugby or in English Premiership soccer, and, you know, how highly they were held in those areas. So you are dealing with, you know, high quality people here who have high ambitions themselves, and they expect you as a manager and a team to match those ambitions. And when you have that sort of dynamic going on in a team, then you're really in a great place. And I suppose, just back to your point about them speaking to the team, you know, you could use them to build cohesion in your team. You know, it's difficult to do all of these things, and you've got to consider, you're the manager, you probably have a pretty stressful job yourself, 9 to 5 or maybe less or maybe more, and you've only a certain amount of time to do these things, and you may not have the expertise in this area. As a manager, you only need to know what works and make sure that it works. You don't need to know the A to a Z of the detail of these things, and I think that's why you see a lot of teams now where a manager is a very different role than it was a number of years ago, where you had manager stroke coach at intercounty level. I think the quality of preparation of intercounty teams now is at such a level you'll rarely see that anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You have to focus on everything. One other thing, because Jamie Barron was at that media day I was at yesterday, Aaron Galan is coming up next. He said, I've never really played in Walsh Park when it's packed to a maximum capacity. So we're really looking forward to that atmosphere and what it's going to give us, and hopefully drive the team on. He's talking about Walsh Park for the championship, and I was just thinking, I never played in a Moor Park packed out. I don't know if you were ever involved in a team with your own home ground full to the rafters. Probably the most packed the Moor Park was just a league game against Kildare under Mick O'Dwyer, where the whole stand was full and the terrace on the other side was pretty much full, but both ends. And I was just thinking, when Jamie Barron has never played in his own home ground full, and that is such a brilliant thing that Munster, these Munster leagues and Leinster leagues are giving these teams, is a chance to have a home game in a packed stadium. Isn't it crazy so many players wouldn't have actually played in their own home ground full?
I'm really surprised that Jamie, you know, considering the support
for Walsh. When would he, you see, in a league game, really? They never would have had championship games there.
It's a good point. It's very, very beneficial to the county, and A couple of times we played Galway in a couple of championship matches, we played Offaly in a championship match in Moore Park. Woolleyed, it wasn't full, but there was a great crowd there. Yeah. It was certainly a huge difference.
It's a lovely feeling, isn't it?
It is a very, very different feeling. And look, you're going back a little bit now to your sports psychologist. Here's your role to play. So, you know, Jamie hasn't played in Wells Park before when the place was half full or quarter full or whatever, and now he's going to go into a Munster championship and play Limerick in Wells Park in the round three of the Munster championship. And I can tell you, they'll be hanging out of the rafters, they'll be jumping in over the wall to get to see that match.
That's where the emotion will be too much. You'll need to talk to someone about that.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. No, this is where these people with really can help you along the way with these type of things.
Yeah. Okay. Great stuff. Right. Up next is Aaron Galan, who I interviewed in Croke Park yesterday. Thanks to Allianz, they're sponsoring the National Football and Hurling Leagues for the last 27 years. Allianz are, so that's thanks to them. And he's up next.
A lot of people do say, what do you love about hunting? They do say, is it the fresh air? Is it the great outdoors? Is it the thrill? No. I just love killing things, right? Absolutely.
So I'm here in Croke Park with Aaron Galan. Aaron, this back to where all the magic happened, not so long ago.
Yeah, I think it's only 7 or 7.5 months from now. Fond memories, but...
Is this your first time back since?
It is.
Is it?
But, fond memories. But look, as I said there a while ago, last year now was in the past, and hopefully it'll make more history here this year.
Well, let's just go back quickly. So where were you on the field when the full-time whistle went? Because my memory of it was Condon coming out with the ball, and then there were about five different Limerick players just started sprinting all over the field.
I think I was just here, where Joe was taking the free around here. I was the person actually just in front of him, praying to God that he wouldn't reach or go wide or something.
Were you doing any talking to him, though?
No, geez, no. Because I'd hate if someone was doing that to me when I was taking a free. So I don't think it makes much of a difference anyway, so it's kind of stupid.
Yeah, okay, so it's just free takers' respect there to Joe and the last
Not even that. I was probably trying to catch my breath as well, so I probably I didn't have enough energy to say anything.
So, come here, how did all the celebrations go?
It was great. We enjoyed them anyway.
Yeah. I was reading the big thing for you was to bring the cup back to Patrick's Well.
Yeah, obviously, like, you know, there's been so many, you can even say, legends of the game that have been playing with Patrick's Well and Limerick over the years that were unlucky enough not to win in All-Ireland. Even take, for example, our manager now, Ciarán, and Gary Kirby, like, they soldiered at Limerick for, 10 or 12 years, and I think they're considered, like, two of the greatest hurlers to ever play, and, like, they were just unfortunate not to win a Lee McCarthy, but, like, they've worked with us the whole way up along, so I suppose it was kind of just nice to bring back them and see the joy that it brought around the place.
Yeah, and was there emotions? Because obviously they were the two, when I think back to Limerick in those years, you think of Kirby and you think of Carey, like, they were the two big names. Was there emotion? Was it an emotional night in Patrick's Well, or...?
Well, you could say that, I suppose. Just everyone was just kind of over the moon. I suppose myself, Keane and Dermot being the only three on the panel, I suppose, kind of was a big night for us, and I don't know, it was great, like, just the lift that I gave to the whole village and, like, old people, young people. I know you're probably sick of people saying that, but especially back at home, it was great and it really lifted spirits at home.
So how did you organise the celebrations? Like, I mean, did you take turns bringing cups around? Because, like, you seem to handle it very well. You're back this year absolutely flying it. When did you get back into training? Like, was there someone organising what you would do with the cup? It's not like Limerick had too much practice with how to deal with this.
Oh, Jesus, no. I suppose the cup stays out with Siobhan Scanlon out in the Munster Council office, so to be fair to her, she's brilliant with it, and if you wanted the cup now, you'd have to book it about 2 months in advance, I'd say, so people are still fascinated with it, but no, Siobhan's very good with lending it out, like if you wanted to bring it to a neighbour, if it has to go to a nursing home or something like that, so just get in touch with Siobhan and she'll set you on your way then.
Okay, so when did you get back as a group actually training?
I suppose we went to Boston. When did we went to Boston?
Late November, was it?
November, so we were back training at the start of November for that, and once we were back from Boston, you might have had a week or two, and then straight back into it again.
So you got September and October off, pretty much.
Basically,
which you couldn't come back out of shape, so you probably didn't even get the whole of October off.
No, but even that, like, even you'd have the 2 or 3 weeks after the final, you could be celebrating, but you're back with the club then, and once the club's over, again, you'd have 2 or 3 weeks, great, back to start the college, do what you want, but... like, all that is great, but I think you kind of get sick of it after a while too, so you want yourself to get back into the gym and get back doing a bit of running yourself, like, just to get right for when the year does start up to try and get a bit of a head start.
And the head start's important because, like, I mean, when you came back this year, you were fourth favourites to retain the All-Ireland. Usually the All-Ireland champions go straight back in as favourites the following year. Did that kind of annoy you a little bit? Was it kind of in your heads to hit this league hard and show that you're, you know, you mean business again?
Well, that's the first I've heard of that now, to be honest. I wouldn't really be looking into that too much, but
you're second favourites now.
Okay. But no, look, I think we were in 1B for 8 or 9 years, and it's just miserable at times. But look, eventually last year we got out of it, and we said this year we really wanted to give the league a rattle and kind of prove that last year winning the All-Ireland wasn't a fluke, and we can put it up to the top teams. And I think we've give a good account of ourselves so far. We're sent to go one more step further now Sunday.
Yeah, so it's more how it's how you would have targeted the league having been promoted, even regardless of winning the All-Ireland.
Yeah, look, I think the league is important, and some people might use it for blood and new players, but I think we've kind of done both and taken it serious at the same time. And I think we've benefited from that, because even the new players that come in, they have got good game time, and now they're pushing for place on the team, and it's kind of keeping everyone kind of focused. Like, you know, if you're playing last year, you're not going to have your play cemented this year, you know, you have to go back and work just as hard. So I think the new people into the panel and the fact that they're playing good quality matches against the top teams is really helping us. And
yeah, because John Kiley was getting annoyed recently. He was saying everybody keeps talking about the first 15 and the All-Ireland winning team, and he's like, there's no All-Ireland winning team this year. It's like every place is pretty much up for grabs.
Yeah, and it's true, like last year is last year pretty much, and you know, as I said, no one's guaranteed their spot, and if you think you are, a little tough looker when we're sitting on the sideline watching the next game. So every day we're training Tuesday and Friday, like, you have to go out and just work hard and hopefully make an impression and get back on the team again.
But you need that, though. You need lads breathing down your throat, right? Or else, like, you could just sit back and go, well, we won the All-Ireland, I played really well last year.
You do, of course, yeah. Geez, a bit of competition is very good. Well, we're definitely benefiting from it anyway. The people coming in, they're really on our breathing down our neck. So as you said, yeah, it's keep like we're not getting comfortable with, because you've played a few matches. I think they're kind of pushing us out of our comfort zone, and everyone is trying to get on the first 15, and even to get onto the 20 or 26 men match day panel is tough. And look, I suppose that's just testament to the amount of people we have champing at the bit now. Yeah. At the minute.
Come here, how are you feeling? Because you have a lot of hurling done. Like, I mean, you a lot of Fitzgibbon, you made the final, you were given a rest against Cork. Because you know from last year, it's a long year, and that Munster League is intense. Do you know what I mean? Do you feel tired even at this stage of the league? Or?
No, it is a long old year, but you know what? You're playing hurling for a reason. I wouldn't have it any other way. Sure, you're only mad to play a few matches. No, to be fair to the boys like John and Joe and Paul, they fairly monitor everyone's load fairly well, so no one's dogged, like, you know, everyone's looked after fairly well, and everyone's kind of doing the same workload. So, no, I'm fresh and raring to go on, yeah.
Fresh and raring to go for the final. And come here, you were a late bloomer then, right? So, from reading about you, you were playing junior for Patrick's Well for a little while, and Kieran Carey had a chat with you. And
I'm actually full back and I was corner forward.
He was full back and you were corner forward on the junior team.
Yeah,
so how did you end up playing junior then? Like, I mean, was it just because you were young, or is it just because you, like?
Actually, I suppose once you're, I think it was 16 when I was playing, once you're out of 16, you can go straight into playing senior or junior. Well, obviously, I wasn't good enough to make the senior team when I was that young. So yeah. I suppose the next best thing was to get a few competitive matches against people that are older than me, and I think kind of brought me on a bit. And yeah,
and you were a sub on the minor team. Like, I mean, when did you start really, you know, when did the big improvements in your game come?
I don't know, it's kind of hard to put an old finger on it, I suppose, but I think 2015 would have been my first year, like, having a full run at playing senior Patrick's Well, and I think I was playing half forward that year, and I got on fairly okay. And after that, then I kind of got called into the 21s panel. I suppose just the level of training that I was exposed to back then, it definitely brought me on leaps and bounds.
Yeah, and even in your own head, like, was even when you were maybe a sub in the minors, was playing for Limerick a huge ambition of yours, or were you just kind of good and things clicked?
It's a tough old question now. Obviously, look, it's great to be involved when you're young and kind of get introduced to the setup, and like, if you're going to be playing with Limerick, this is what you're going to be doing for the next few years, I suppose. But I don't know, I kind of took great confidence and learned a lot from, like, myself and Keane would have been the only two from Patrick's Well growing up that would have played, say, 14, 16s and minors together. But, like, just kind of going training and listening to a fella of his calibre, like, you just learn so much off him. So I think I learned a good bit off him as well.
You got the book. It's funny that Seamus Flanagan on the full forward line was a sub on the under 21s. So, like, the two of you are flying it in there. Maybe, I don't know, you've that extra bit of hunger that you didn't have it all handy when you were coming up through the underage ranks.
I don't know, it could be down to different game plans now and stuff as well, you know, like, that could suit us in the full forward line, but if we're playing under, say, maybe if I was playing full forward with the club at home, it might be a different game plan, and, you know, I mightn't touch the ball for the whole match.
Right.
So I suppose, I don't know, it's kind of a tricky question, you know, I suppose you have to try and work your way into games as well, you know, and
that's the thing. But about your game plan is you're on the ball, you know, if you make the runs, that ball is coming.
Yeah, look, you're probably giving away her game plan now. But, yeah, making the runs.
We know your game plan by now, I think.
Yeah, obviously making runs is vital, not just for us, but for any team, I suppose. And like, I suppose winning primary position back to field, I suppose the first thing any team wants to do is get into the full forward line or into the forward. So we're just trying to replicate that.
Come here, talking about your game plan, did Dublin throw you a little bit? Because we know your game plan is all about dropping the half forward line deep, making space for yourself and Flanagan and Mulcahy and Casey and all these inside, whereas they man-marked your half-forward line instead of letting them off, and then they had a sweeper back covering you. That threw you a little bit in the first half. I hadn't seen the team do that to you last year.
I wouldn't say it threw us, no. But obviously Dublin, they were a tough opposition, to be fair to them. They had their homework done on us the same way we did on them. But I suppose you can kind of say the two teams kind of play similar to each other, and that, I think that might kind of cancel each other out. But in any match, like we got a 10-minute purple patch against them, it could have very easily been them getting the purple patch against us, but luckily we tagged on a few scores, and in the end that's what got us over the line.
Is it important this year to come with something fresh with your game plan? Because, like, I mean, there's teams going to be watching video after video of how you played last year and coming up with ideas. It's not an easy fix whether to follow that half-forward line or stay back or what to do, but are you conscious that you might need to bring something else to the table?
Jesus, I just stick to my own job in the full forward line now. That's up to John and Paul.
Even with your own game, like, I mean, are you conscious that you need to practice on stuff? Like, what would you be saying to yourself? Like, I know you, like, over the shoulder you're really good, but you played a lot in the half forward line. So is that stuff you're practicing now that you're full time in the corner with Limerick?
Yeah, I suppose. Someone actually said it to me. I went down to watch Club Trend the other day, and someone said it to me, like, geez, last year was actually your first time ever playing the full forward line. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I suppose. I was thinking back on it, and no, like, obviously you're still learning the tricks of the trade as you go in, and or as you go along, sorry, but I suppose even taken from Seamus and Graham, they've been playing in full forward line all their lives, and like even learning the runs, like the clever runs Graham makes or the sprints out into space for Seamus, I'm just learning a lot from them, and same as anything, like, you just learn as you go along.
So you were wing forward then all your life before that, and wing forward with the under-21s when you won the All-Ireland in your last year, and Mary Eye, you think you play centre forward. So what are you a working wing forward? I wouldn't imagine you're doing the Gerard Hegarty role as a wing forward.
Jeez, I don't think I'm up to that standard now, yes. But,
covering all the ground, but you'd be more of an attacking wing forward. So the corner forward position is a whole new trade, like you're saying, to learn.
Yeah, and look, I think it's the way the game's going now. Every half forward, not just the Road or the Limerick half forward, they're all dropping back and covering every blade of grass in the field, so yeah, I don't think I'm cut out for that, so I'm fairly content now in the full forward line at the moment.
Come here, you like your routines, I'm reading. So the biggest one was you got your poor mother to drive home from Dublin.
No, I didn't force her, she wanted to.
So anybody that hasn't heard this, he got his mother to drive home from Dublin the day of the All-Ireland final to cook him, what is it, 3 poached eggs and 2 rashers?
Yeah.
And you can't cook that yourself?
No, fortunately not. Well, I probably
but
could.
Do you like the routine of her doing it?
I think she likes it more so than me doing it. I think even that time it came out in the newspaper that I was after saying that, she was like, everyone thinks you made me come down, and she's like, if I didn't make them now, I think something would have went wrong in the match and you wouldn't have won.
So she's the superstitious
Yeah.
Okay, and you have another routine then the day before the game. Kyle Hayes was talking about this in a piece in the Examiner, that you go for breakfast with him on the day before the game. You have protein pancakes and coffee, and then you go for your championship haircut.
Yeah, and look, I suppose the routine is important, but we wouldn't be doing it, Jesus, look, well playing a match at all. I suppose we just do it to kind of pass time the day before match.
Don't lie now. Everybody knows why you get the championship haircut.
I know, we just do it kind of the pass time, like, because there's not much you can do the day before match. Like, there's nothing you can do that won't tire you out. So I suppose we kind of just chill out and pass a few hours for us.
Yeah, because it's hard to get it. So if you like routines then, because you're obviously in college, so you have the whole summer off. So, like, I mean, is it difficult to get a routine, you know, going during your day when you have the summer completely free?
I suppose it's what kind of helps me is you're going to have a part-time job there during the summer. So, you know, if you're working, say, Monday to Friday or a few days there during the week, you know, you're up in the morning, you're going to work, you're having your lunch, you're eating your dinner, you're doing all that at the same time every day, and then you're going training. So, no, as I said, it's important to have a routine, like, because even coming up to big matches, you know, and if you have your routine, you're worrying about ticking all the boxes in your routine, you're not worried about, oh, geez, I'm playing a big match, like, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So what's the part-time job you get during the summer? Do you, like, I mean, because it is important to take your mind off it. Like, I mean...
Yeah. I'll try and look for something handy again this summer, I suppose. But, last summer, it worked out well. I was, you know, calving as a charitable there. car sponsorship, so I was back there a few days during the week, but and it didn't work me too hard, so I was fresh most of the time.
Very good. I won't keep you too much longer because we've got some tours coming into Croke Park here. Right. Waterford at the weekend, like, I mean, that's going to be a great game because you both kind of like to play nice short game mixed up with the long game as well.
It is, yeah. Look, and to be fair to them, they're flying it, especially after a new manager. You know, things could go flat for a while until he puts his own mark on the team, but no, to be fair, they're flying and they've definitely one of the standout teams of the league so far. I think I said it a few times, they have some of the best hurlers in Ireland, so we're definitely going to be up against it.
Do you watch other games? So if you've got a Saturday night game, would you watch the games the next day on TG Cahir or sit down and watch them, or would you stay away from it outside of the games that you're not playing?
I wouldn't be mad into watching it now, but if I was at nothing else, I would watch it. Yeah, just sit down at home and chill out and watch a few matches. Yeah.
So you've Noel Connors, I think, at the weekend. He's got bigger legs than you, even though your legs are fairly big. So that's going to be a tough one again.
It is, of course, yeah. And geez, thinking back, like, I think I've seen a few clips on YouTube there of, or even Andrew Shoxley, Laker Gael the other day. He was playing maybe 10 or 11 years ago. So the wealth of experience he has, I'm definitely going to be up against it. But look, you want to mark the best players in the country to see where you're at. So looking forward to it all the same.
Yeah, well, listen, thanks very much for giving us your time. And we'll talk to you again.
Yeah, we do, we have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well, so we had a couple of filly donkeys, so I brought them down, and so we actually sold them to, I think I had four donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford, so we did, so there's the piebald donkey from there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey,
they call it. Yeah, you see them on the beaches, never. And so yeah, you can actually one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey in Eden, and a donkey in Eden Palace.
Okay, so Paddy Power predictions, Cheddar. We're finally going to talk about the match. People will be wondering, when the hell are they going to preview this league final? So listen, I thought Aaron Galan was very good there. Like, I thought it was a good one with him and Seamus Flanagan, and they kind of had a checkered path through the minors and under-21s, and now they're in beside each other. Galan in a new position, Flanagan kind of has played in a few different positions, and they're so bloody good now, and Galan puts it down to the Limerick system, and this Limerick system is becoming famous now, Cheddar, isn't it? Like, I mean, when you talk about Limerick, it's nearly always, how do you beat this system?
I think when you're talking about top teams in any sport, Wooly, you're talking about the structure that they play under, and, you know, all the different aspects of that. It's not necessarily the Limerick system as such. You know, any of the top teams, you know, look at soccer or look at rugby, and, you know, look at any team sport, generally speaking, you know, you may very well be very, very lucky to have 15 incredibly skillful players that, you know, they might be the best players ever walked, and they just make it up as they go along, play off the cuff, in other words, and you're going to win matches. But, you know, generally speaking, you're not going to have that quality or that depth of quality in your team. So you have to have some structure around that. How deep that is a different matter. So I think what's interesting, Wooly, about Limerick is, you know, I know you want to generate a discussion around the system, but I find it much deeper than that. Limerick have been doing this at underage level for a number of years. I've said this before in the show here. This didn't just come last year that Limerick suddenly jumped on a system of play and, look, this is great, let's go with it. You know, these players have been conditioned to play within types of systems for a number of years. I remember Anthony Daly being over Limerick minor teams. I actually saw him in Thurles. He was actually, I think he might be the director of hurling in the Limerick Academy for a number of years.
Yeah.
I've said this a number of times. If the counties that haven't been successful recently want to look at, you know, the ideal way of doing things, well, I strongly suggest you go down and speak to the people in Limerick and figure out, going back a number of years, what did they get right to get them into the place that they're in now.
Well, Dublin gave us some idea of how to break the system. At least they tried something different. So their whole half back line marked the Limerick half forward line, man marked them all over the field, and they played with five forwards. So they played a sweeper. Obviously, every time some people see a sweeper, they start giving out about it. That's crazy as far as I'm concerned. against Limerick, for me, tactically, it makes sense, because there's that huge problem always when you play Limerick, Cheddar, is do you follow the three lads or do you hold back? There's pluses and minuses for both of them. Even if you're to let one, if you're to let man mark two and let one off, you can be sure bloody Keane Lynch is going to be picking the lad that you left off, you know, to hurt you. So the solution for me, if I was a hurling manager, would be almost what Dublin did and say, for that match, surprise Limerick and give them something to think about. And that did surprise them and it gave them something to think about. And it's interesting, Pádraig Fanning was interviewed before the National League started and everyone was obsessed asking him about Waterford systems and are you going to change from Derek McGrath, and he said, we may use a sweeper at times, we may not. You have to play what's in front of you. As you saw with Clare last year, they switched back to sweeper at one stage. So, you know, you wonder, will Fanning potentially have the tactical flexibility to just throw a rabbit out of a hat and do something he hadn't done in the previous league games?
Well, he has a tactical flexibility, Willie, to answer your last question first. Tadhg De Burgh has been playing that role for a number of years.
He
has it if he needs it. But look, Dublin have been playing that role for the last...
Fives can do it if he's back. Well, he's not back.
But look, Dublin didn't do anything different than they've been doing last year. Sean Moran... Dublin have played with four halfbacks all through last year. That's what made him difficult to beat. Sean Moran was that, you know, you could call him the ball carrier, the ball distributor. He'd done the very, very same role. Very, very effective, if you belong to Kenny last Sunday.
But against Limerick, Dublin started with young Barrett in the corner forward and brought him back. You know, it was very obvious.
They did flood the middle third, and you need to disrupt Limerick doing that. And they did disrupt Limerick. And,
yeah.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, we speak a lot about some of the Limerick sort of marquee hurlers, the skillful players. But last Sunday proved that probably the most important player to the Limerick system is actually Seamus Flanagan. And when he came on the field, they certainly played better when he was on the field. And he's a very unorthodox positioning and a very unorthodox type of player. Incidentally, who, you know, didn't have a huge amount of success in his career in underage up along, as you've mentioned earlier on. But look, I think Waterford have a lot of parts needed to beat Limerick on Sunday, and they've also some big players here, and they've found some big players. You know, I mean, Colm Lyons and at full back, you know, he's a no nonsense hurler, and so they've a lot of players here that are, you know, big men that can actually deal with the height that Limerick and the physicality that Limerick bring to it. They'll certainly match them in that. And, you know, Waterford have had a lot of success over the last couple of years. This particular team has had a lot of success. So they're not going into a league final, you know, green behind the ears and you know, they're not going to be caught like a rabbit in headlights in this game. And I give them a really, really great chance of turning over Limerick on Sunday. And that's really interesting, Willie, because... they're going to play one another. It's in Welsh Park. I stand corrected on that, but I think the third round of the Munster Championship, Waterford play Limerick in, and I think Limerick actually have a bye in the first round, and they're playing Cork in the second round of Munster. And you could very well go into that Welsh Park clash in Waterford. Limerick could, with no points on the board. Okay, one of them is a bye. They've lost a game to Cork, and you know Waterford could have. I think they have two matches before. They could have. I think they play Clare first. They might have a bye the second day. So the point I'm making is that the result on Sunday and the performance on Sunday could have a big bearing on that championship game. It's only 6 or 7 weeks or 8 weeks away, you know. So it's a serious, serious game for both teams.
Yeah. So what do you think Waterford will do then with the Limerick half-forward line? All three were taken off, like I said, against Dublin. You've probably got Philip Mahoney, Tadhg De Burgh and Kevin Moore. And I'd imagine that's guaranteed to be your half-back line. Are they going following them? Are they going to play a sweeper? Like Tadhg De Burgh can play a sweeper, but then you have to let off Kyle Hayes. Do they want to even let one of them off?
Well, they might just play him back in the forwards and bring him back. They could just play as a third midfielder. So you could play three up through the lines and two up front. And bear in mind, there's some fair players to do that. You know, Stephen Bennett is a fair size of a man full forward. You know, so in terms of you having a spearhead at full forward and an outlet for ball when you're under pressure, you know, ball will stick up there for them. And you know, it did last Sunday. And if you know, you could. It may necessarily be. You probably wouldn't bring in a defender, will you? Because you know, if you're going to play in a third midfielder, you probably need to be a forward. Maybe you know, with that's going to hurt the opposition.
Yeah.
Because you need to be able to score from
distance.
It's a very
negative. That is a negative tactic. That's maybe the fault with Dublin, in that You know, they played with the five forwards all the time instead of maybe even mixing it up throughout the game.
Well, they did that. It wasn't new what they did last Sunday. That really was, in essence, Gilroy's model last Sunday. They didn't have... they had John Hetherington up front as the target man as such, rather than Liam Rush. I think Liam might be injured at the minute. You know, so it wasn't that dissimilar to that. And it did cause problems for Limerick. And you know, the game was in a melting pot for long enough. Bear in mind that Dublin lost three or four players in the first 20 minutes or so through injury. And look, you might say that the depth of your panel, you know, should be able to sort that. But if two or three of those players were very, very important to the way you wanted to play, you know, it could be just your puck out strategy or something like that. Well, losing them, you know, wasn't helpful to them anyway, let's put it that way.
Yeah. So how do Waterford hurt Limerick then? So, like, I mean, arguably Waterford's strongest line is, well, maybe their half-back line. Their half-forward line has Austin Gleeson and Porrick, Mahoney, the two wing forwards, and they have Kearney in the middle, who likes to put himself about. I like the look of him, but I'm not sure if he's the one that should be marking Hannan, because Hannan will let him off. Would it put Gleeson in on Hannan and let Kearney go out on Burns? Because Burns needs to... I think Kearney would be perfect to be told go out there and you know, set fire to Burns maybe, and don't let him get on any ball.
Well, I'm not sure if Hannan will be back, will he, first of all. But look,
Dan Morrissey then will be centre
Dan
back.
Dan Morrissey will be centre back. And look, Sutcliffe gave him a huge amount of problems last Sunday. You know, the sort of interchange. Some of the times you see Sutcliffe wing forward, and a lot of times then you see him in centre forward.
Mostly centre forward.
Mostly centre forward. And you know, Kearney is a very, very quick, mobile player. And you know, if they can isolate Morrissey centre back and take him on and run at him and take him out of position, I suppose, more than anything else. You know, there's a lot of players around there. You know, Austin Gleeson is an incredible hurler, and he's, after coming back, he's going to improve as he goes along. Last Sunday wasn't his best performance. And Porrig Mahoney, look, he's a known scoring threat. So if they can open up that area around the centre and have those type of players coming into that pace, filling it, coming in from a deeper out the field, you know, they could cause Limerick enough problems. You know, Limerick have a different full back. Finn was in full back, I think. Dempsey's injured at the minute.
So Mike Casey was back the last day, actually. He came on as a sub.
All right. They had a number of players that did come on as a sub, as I said, here, Flanagan came on as well. You know, whether they were just playing out their league and giving everybody that, you know, featured in the league the time, or whether players were injured and are on their way back or not. Well, look, you don't know until you're inside the camp. But
go on.
I just think that Limerick have a lot of things, as I said about Dublin last Sunday, have a lot of things needed to be able to, or sorry, Waterford have a lot of things needed to be able to take on this Limerick team. And you know, you spoke about the system. Well, look, Parrig and the Waterford management have had 9 months or a year now to be able to figure out how they're going to play, because you're going to have to figure it out for the championship anyway. So we would have assumed that they've all of that work done now. And I think I don't think Parrig will change around his team a huge amount. You can't really do that, but you will make certain little tweaks that you're hoping will give you a little bit of a pull on the day and get momentum for your team.
Is the important thing for the Waterford half forward line to try and hold the half forward line as much as possible? Because if they start dropping into midfield, they're going to get into that battle zone where Garrod Hegarty's going to drop, Tom Morrissey, Kyle Hayes going to drop, and they probably won't win that physical battle. Dublin might have had a better chance of winning it. Gleeson and Matney don't need to be in that area. They need to maybe, you know, hold the half forward line a little bit more and not get sucked into that kind of area.
That's true, you could do that, but then you're very, very dependent on your half back line to be able to pick the pass to those players. And look, if Kevin Moran picks a pass to Ozzie Gleeson or to Parrig Mahoney, he picks two or three of them and they go to hand and they turn around and put them over the bar as loose players that they're not being marked. Well, look, Limerick are going to have to do something. They're either going to have to push up on their players or pull their half hour line back even more.
Even more. They don't. The Limerick half hour line don't want to go back that far, don't they? They want to meet you around the middle.
They do, and they want to be able to leave, I suppose, just enough of a run to be able to hit the opposing parallelogram as well in runs and create confusion coming through. But the point that we're making the Woolley is that Waterford have the quality of player and the athletic player and the long shooters. I mean, Ozzie has been shooting off his own half back line last year. Parry Mahon has been doing this now for a number of years. So if you could pressurise the likes of Dermot Burns, that he's not able to go front foot and get up the field and be able to deliver the type of ball that Limerick are looking for inside in their full forward line. Look, you're a good bit there at that stage. How you do it, you need to think it out.
Yeah, that's why the point on Burns. Burns gives the mountain of ball into that full forward line. I mean, is that not your starting point with Limerick? Let's disrupt Burns. Like, do you almost have to, like, that's why I'm suggesting putting Kearney out on him, where if you lose Kearney for the game, you're not losing Gleeson or Mahoney, you know what I mean? Mahoney, you're giving them more of an attacking role. But tell Kearney, I don't want Burns to be playing any ball in there. And, like, I mean, take that away from him, because for me, looking from my point of view, Burns is the man that delivers those diagonal, long diagonal balls, and often into Glenn.
He's a very improved player, first of all. We spoke about him last year.
He used to puck it for points too much, remember?
It was sort of pot shots a lot of the time from him, but now he's used the ball, now is much, much better. Look, it depends on the player that you have, and you really, really need to know your players very, very well. If you're going to take on to keep the likes of Dermot Burns busy, well, you need a player that's able to play in his face, but you also need a very, very good tackler, and a very good technical tackler that you're not giving away a freeze. Or, alternatively, you need to keep your player away from him and force him to move to mark you. And to do that, you need to be able to ping the pass to your player pretty regular to be able to score from distance, and now put the pressure back on John Kiley.
Right, which Gleeson or Matany would be better at doing.
I just think that they would be, yeah. I think Pádraig Mahony to play in the face of Dermot Burns on next Sunday, and I'm not saying he couldn't do it, but I think if you were to be able to play the ball through the line yourself, protect possession, give it to your shooters and shoot the scores, well, now you're putting the pressure back on John to change something in his setup that he mightn't want to do.
Two matchups that are going to be absolutely fantastic, and one I hope it comes off is Jamie Barron versus Keane Lynch. Like, I mean, just total hurling these two lads are. Like, I mean, it's incredible the confidence they have. The Barron's pick up there to fool Joe Canning was incredible. Keane Lynch, it's just incredible the way he goes around. It's like the ball is stuck onto the top of his hurl, even if he's being tackled. Do you think they'll pair off one-on-one, or do you think they might actually go, let's try and both teams will say, let's put someone on both of them?
I think they'll do the latter, Willie. I think both of them they just like the freedom to play.
Yeah.
And I think limiting Jamie, and certainly limiting Keane Lynch with a sort of a half markers role or a sort of a defensive midfield role, I think would neuter them just too much. I think both managers would want to be able to get those free. Jamie Barron has been exceptional. I don't know what sort of fuel he's on to have the energy that he has. And, you know, he's been probably the most consistent and best midfielder in Ireland for a number of years now. And I think when I think of it now, Woolley never gets the recognition he deserves.
Not enough, I don't think.
Not enough, no. He's a certain engine room for Waterford. I think Keane's a different type of player. He's a technically incredible player, great vision about spotting the gap and spotting the player moving and that. And I think he set up the goal for Flanagan on Sunday, sort of showed that. So I think it'll be the other way around. I think, and you may not see Dunford do this. It may be a third person that actually might do this.
Yeah, because I was looking at Dunford and I was thinking that maybe Donovan would pick up Jamie Barron, but yes. Dunford wouldn't be picking up Keane Lynch. But you're right, Keane Lynch is almost like the Harlem Globetrotters of hurling, isn't he? He does things that other players don't do.
He's a special player.
Yeah, he's definitely a special. The other one is Noel Connors versus Aaron Gallan. I stood beside Gallan yesterday in Croke Park, Cheddar. I couldn't believe the size of him. He came in, I don't know, like maybe he marks other big men. I didn't have him put down as a big man, but he's huge. His legs are huge. Noel Connors is a huge man as well, and he's been around the block, and he, very rare forwards get anything off him at all. So this is going to be an absolutely brilliant showdown.
Yes, yes, it is. Incidentally, and you're right about Aaron. Aaron's, oftentimes you'd see that with some players that talk out much bigger than you think they are in street clothes and that. And he's certainly one of those. He's a big man and a big unit to try and mark. And strangely enough, I hope I have my facts right here now. In the Fitzgibbon Cup final, there was a Cork player that I hadn't heard of was marking him and done a very, very good job in him. Now, it was a pure man-marking job, and he was definitely in the face and everywhere else he could be. And, you know, it did cause Aaron some difficulties in that game. Now,
he's out centre-forward in that game, no?
He was sort of all around the place, really. Right. He was himself and Guilfoyle were the two marquee players, I suppose, for Mary Eye. And, you know, UCC just had a better team. It was difficult to expect, a couple of players that calibre just to carry the team as such. But I think you're right. It's going to be an interesting one. And, you know, Noel Connors is a sort of the heart of the Waterford team. I always see him as that sort of heart and soul of the team. And he showed that again last. And I think a lot of the Waterford fans, you know, have great regard for Noel Connors. And you know, he's obviously, you know, a leader within that group, not just necessarily because of his age. It's just that's what he is. So it's going to be a fair challenge. And if you look at last year, I suppose, you know, it'll depend on how Parg neuters the way Limerick play. Limerick last year, particularly in the full forward line, an awful lot, too many times, they were able to create one-on-ones in the full forward line with the type of delivery that was put in and with the mobility of the people around them. And, you know, you're going back to Aaron Gillan's, you know, physique at that stage and his ability to be able to win even that contested ball. And, you know, once he wins it, then he's a big unit to try and stop coming through. So, you know, how Waterford managed that and, you know, probably stopped the distribution of ball into him in the first place, if they can, you know, could make life for Noel Connors a little bit easier.
Yeah. Could we see a rabbit out of a hat and Brick Walsh starting in the full forward line for his aerial ability, maybe in beside the two Bennetts, just to maybe surprise Limerick? We know Dublin, this is another thing I often talk about, we'll finish up on this one, Cheddar, is just surprising the opposition. Like, Dublin did it, you know, they hadn't played a sweeper, and obvious they usually play more, they free up more and he won't follow his man. But just Davy Fitz is great at doing this. Like, doing something that the opposition are not expecting you to do. The obvious thing to do is to pick the obvious team, you know? Like, in a big final, having the guts to go, let's go with Brick instead of young Tommy Ryan, who offers something completely different, because that's what Limerick will be expecting.
Yes, if you had time to practice it. You know, bear in mind you've only 7 days to do it now. You know, if you're playing in a certain way or something like that and you have time to change that and to rehearse it, then, you know, definitely go with it. But you'd only go with it if you thought it was going to give you, you know, some real benefits here. Look, if you go back a good little bit, and there's people will remember before this, Galway played Kilkenny in an All-Ireland semi-final in Turles one day. I can't remember the player that Cyril Farrell used. I'm not too sure if it was in or not, but I know Paddy Prendergast was the player. He played a two-man full forward line. It was sort of innovative at the time when I think back on it now. And he completely fooled Kilkenny on the day, and Galway won it. So you could come up with something like that, but you'll only come up with it if you think it's going to give you a real chance, because, you know, if you can be consistent in your performance right through, you're probably giving yourself a better chance of winning. If you come up with something like this, does it throw the whole team and that? You don't know.
Yeah.
And if you haven't had a chance to rehearse it, it's probably even higher risk.
Yeah, maybe that with the 7 day turnaround we might forget about something too radical coming out.
But will you bring in Brick? Is not a risk, you know. Brick has proved he could play in goal.
He could even go across on Burns either and do a job.
He could very
there.
Well do that, and exactly. No, if you want that physical presence and to play in the face of Dermot Burns, you know, you'd be definitely heading for Brick to do that type of work for you, because, you know, he whatever role he's given, he will stick to the detail of that and he'll deliver for you, and that's what you're looking for in something like that.
Yeah, exactly right. So we'll go predictions. We are Paddy Power predictions time. Who do you fancy, Cheddar?
Look, I'm going to go against all of the scribes and all of the pundits, will you? I'm going to go with Waterford on Sunday. I think they have a little bit of momentum behind them. And, you know, they have a lot of the tools to unhinge Limerick here. People are rightly speaking up Limerick. They're all Ireland champions and have been very, very impressive. But, you know, they struggled a little bit against Dublin last Sunday. And, you know, you've got to go back to the All-Ireland and the matches before that. You know, it's not that they won a lot of the matches by 5 or 6 points like the old Kilkenny team, they hockeyed some teams. And, you know, it was serious performance that you could rely on looking forward to the next year or the next match. So I don't think there's much between them. And I just think that Waterford have some little things and have physicality in certain positions that if they get stuck into it and, you know, if they're really go for it from the start in all of those positions and things come up for them, I actually fancy that. I think that Waterford might win the match, and, you know, I know I might be on my own on that one, but that's what I believe.
Yeah, okay, I wouldn't be too far off that. I don't think there's too much, and I'll go for Limerick just so one of us has to be right, Cheddar, unless it's only a draw can beat us. All right, up next we'll talk to Joe from Paddy Power. Welcome to the Hurling Show, Joe.
Thanks very much, Colin.
We've missed you. You know it's getting serious when Joe arrives in for the big games. You don't really mess around with a Burn Cup or with the early league games.
Yeah, well, we don't want to be filling people's heads too much with different odds and that, but now that it's a bit easier to read or people have a bit more of a gauge on how the season's going, it's a good time to try and make a few quid.
That's the thing, though, because, like, I mean, even from the early rounds of the league, it's a lottery because you don't know what training they're doing. You don't know what teams they're necessarily picking, how many lads are getting runs. You don't know if they're targeting the league or not. So it's a minefield for punters. I imagine for setting bets, it's a minefield for Paddy Power as well.
Yeah, it can certainly be very tricky, and you've got guys playing Fitzgibbon during the week and you don't know if they're playing the weekend, whether they're named or not. Managers you might have four or five sub numbers by the time the team actually comes out onto the pitch. So it can be hard to read, particularly early on in the year, as you say, with different training things and that. But it gives the local man a chance with their inside knowledge, maybe, if they know what's going on behind closed doors.
Would you notice that? Like, say, after a weekend, geez, we set that completely wrong. Somebody must have known something there, you know, with that kind of show up.
It's not blatantly clear, because if those lads are smart enough, they're not going to tell everybody what they know either. So you might get a few lads who know what team's going to be lining out or how good a team's going in training or that kind of thing. So it is kind of hard. It's hard to gauge, and at the same time, the kind of general population of people having a few quid on the matches don't know this, don't have any inside scoop either way. So while the odds might be wrong for a match, the guys in the trading floor are only going what a lot of other people are going on as well, in terms of form and history and things like that. It just tends to change week to week.
Okay, right, fair enough. So we have the same money back special. If money back as a free bet if you're losing, first goal scorer scores a goal anytime. So that's the same as the football show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so just if your first goal scorer doesn't get the first one, but he gets one in 70 minutes, you get your stake back.
Yeah, and we have another prize for all favourites to win. So Donegal, Kerry, Derry, and Limerick. It was 4-1. Now it's 5-1. So you've bumped that up.
Yeah, well, there's only a handful of games this weekend in general, and they're obviously the standout games across the hurling and football league. So we just gave a little boost there from 4-1 out to 5-1 if you expect those four teams to come in this weekend.
Because you actually have all favourites, as strong enough favourites.
Yeah, they are strong enough. I guess, like you're saying, you nearly always get caught with one way or the other, and there's definitely a couple of games there that I can't see there being more than a couple of points in. But at the same time, I would expect all four of those teams to win their games as well. So if you're going to back the favourites, you may as well get the little extra boost there as well on the player price.
So it's 5-1 on that. So the outright betting, Limerick are 8-13 on this, and Waterford are 13-8. What's the thinking there? Obviously Limerick's form throughout the league, but Waterford aren't going bad either.
No, they're not going badly at all, in fairness to them now. And to make a league final would be a real boon for their season and the new manager and that kind of thing. But I mean, like you're saying, Limerick have been, I actually can't believe how good they've been this year, to be honest with you. I thought they'd be coming off a bit of a lull from the All-Ireland. They might take a while to get going, but they've hit the ground running. They've kind of been sweeping teams aside. Like, the Dublin put up a good battle for them last weekend, but they came through relatively comfortably in the end. And on the Waterford side, I think most people would say Galway probably pucked that one away to a certain extent as well. So that's kind of reflected in the betting there. I think it should be a close game. And I mean, they're two teams that know each other very well, and they will be meeting each other soon in the Munster Championship. So they might be holding back ever so slightly. But yeah, Limerick are definitely the fancy team coming into the weekend.
Yeah, so the handicap is -2. So, like, I mean, you have Limerick strong enough favourites, but you're not fancying them to run away with this.
Yeah, that sometimes happens with the handicaps. Compared to what the odds are, you think there'd be a bigger handicap.
I thought there'd be more there. Yeah,
yeah, and I mean, that in that sense, if that's what the traders have come up with in terms of handicap, like, that would suggest Waterford are good value at 13-8 as well, which I think they are. But yeah, you can't really see there being much more than maybe a goal or a few points between them anyway, so that the handicap's kind of reflects that.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Limerick to score first, these are little ones that I like. Lead at half time and win in 70 minutes, so that's 14-5. It's nearly 3-1, and the only risk here is probably who gets the first score, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. We kind of discussed that briefly on the football show. That is kind of the element of luck in it, potentially, if you do expect Limerick to kind of win comfortably and be leading at half time and then win a full time. So that is 14-5 compared to the 8-13 just to win the match outright. But if you were worried about the first score but you still fancy Limerick strongly for them to be leading at half time and win a full time, is 11-8.
Okay, that's not bad bet either. So Limerick are 6-1 to win the final and the All-Ireland. Waterford are 20-1 to win this weekend and win the All-Ireland. So, like, I mean, you obviously have Waterford in as underdogs this weekend, which is reflected in that.
Yeah, so that, I mean, even beyond that as well, if you were just looking at the All-Ireland, Limerick could be a lot lower in the betting than Waterford would for the overall winners of Liam this year.
I have to actually pull you up. Limerick, I was talking to Aaron Gallan about this. He said he didn't notice it. Limerick came back this year as All-Ireland champions, but fourth favourites to retain it. Now they're into second favourites to retain it. Nobody believed in Limerick at the start of this year at all, did they?
Yeah, well, even like that's what I was saying there myself. I couldn't believe how well they're going, because it's rare you see a team win an All-Ireland. It's taken them that long to win it. There was such an pouring of emotion, there were so many other things around it, and it can take a long time to kind of get back in gear, or even like a year can pass you by in a lot of cases. So I think that was just more that some of the performances from the likes of Galway and Clare and Cork were 6 points up against Limerick in the semi-final last year as well, so that has to come into play a little bit. But Limerick's form should league has seen them shorten and shorten, because they really look like they're ready to go for championship.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Limerick, two Munster teams are in the two matches on Sunday, so you have specials for those two teams. Let us know about those ones.
Yes, just with Limerick and Kerry, they're obviously the respective favourites in the Division 1 finals, or the overall league finals. So Limerick and Kerry both win inside the 70 minutes, 7-4, and obviously with Limerick being 8-13 and Kerry are very short as well, they're nearly 1-2 on.
Yeah.
With that, to get the 7-4 for the two of them to win could represent a bit of value for the doubleheader in Crow Park. And then alongside that, with two of the hot shots of the teams there, with Aaron Gallan and David Clifford, for both of them to score a goal inside 70 minutes is 9-1. And Aaron had another great chance there last weekend that he blazed over, but I mean the form the guy's in, he's nearly unstoppable or looking unstoppable, so you can be guaranteed he'll probably get in there inside once or twice. And same with Clifford, like if he gets a sniff of it, he tends not to miss.
Yeah, once Aaron Gallan doesn't try to kick it, and Clifford was one on one twice against Roscommon and missed both, but it was his first game back, so
he's got the two misses out of his system now as well, and he'll be back in Crow Park. So
we're back with the same GAA ambassadors on Paddy Power News, Owen Kelly and Dermot O'Sullivan. Hard to have transferred any of them out, let's be honest.
Well, that's it, yeah. They're two of the biggest names, particularly at the noughties, and they've been great pundits for us, and they're a good laugh as well. We had them on your live shows last year a couple of times. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing what Owen and Dermot have to say, because, I mean, it's hard to tell what way the seasons of Tipperary and Cork are going to go this year once they're just being so competitive. So I'll be looking forward to seeing their reactions after championship matches and that as well. So it should be a good year ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, the two lads, Owen and Dermot, are on news.paddypower.com/GEA. If you want to hear any of their thoughts, they're going to be on that. Right, listen, that's all we've time for. We'll be back on Monday, where we'll review the league final, and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.